Okay, Shavua Tov, Shavua Tov, Shalom Aleichem. What I want to do this week is tie up different bits and pieces of Shaar Bechina. I don't want to move through inside the full Perek Dalet and Perek He. He goes at great length through various areas where he gives us samplings of how to note Hashem's chesed. I think I'll just move through it a little bit more in a cursory way from the outside and touch on a few of the points he makes, and then move toward the end of the shiur where he ties things up. Okay. So we're going to make a couple of highlight a few of the points that he makes throughout these psukim, throughout these prakim. So, first of all, I'll move briefly through the main points that he makes in Perek Revi. If you do want to follow inside, it might be a little challenging because I'm not actually going to be reading inside. I want to, again, kind of touch from on top. But if you do want to follow inside, it's page Kuf Mem in the Lev Toiv. So, in Perek Revi, the Chovis Halvavis first lays down that when we're talking about, again, let's just get the context back. We're talking about Bechina. Bechina means contemplating the kindness of Hashem that we see around us, that we see in our lives, internalizing it, and coming to live with a sense of experiencing Hashem doing kindness with us. And also just noting the greatness and the wisdom of Hashem that we see in the world around us, to be impressed by it, all for the purpose of gaining a sensory dynamic of appreciating who we're dealing with and how indebted we are to Him. So in Perek Revi, in the fourth Perek, the Chovis Halvavis lays down seven categories, seven primary areas of Bechina, primary areas of existence that we can study in order to gain these senses. So number one, he talks about earth and the broad forces of earth in a general way. Earth itself, the way earth is set up, the oceans, the soil, the air, the winds, the clouds, space, the sun, the moon, the stars. There's a lot of chokhmah to study here. There's a lot of chesed to study here. Just to get used to the idea, a simple idea, that air, breathing air, is itself not a given. That is itself something to appreciate, because air is not just nothing. Air is not just empty space. Air is actually a very specific recipe of elements, of chemicals, that come together in a way that sustains life. And if you go a little bit higher up above the atmosphere, the air that we breathe is just a relatively thin layer surrounding Earth that's here to accommodate life. Think about that a little bit. It's not just nothing. We're pretty, very, very, very short beings. And therefore, our heads don't reach the top of the atmosphere. But if you're looking at things from a bit of a more cosmic perspective, the layer of air around Earth is very, very small and thin. And it's a gift given to us by Hashem for the purpose of keeping us alive. So Rabbi Avigdor Miller used to say, a breath of air is a cocktail. It's a very specific recipe. And it's not a bad exercise to sometimes focus on it. When you take a deep breath and focus on enjoying it, and focus on the fact that you are actually drinking in a life-giving recipe that Hashem designed special for you. So that's how I've heard explained It says, Kol Neshama Tahalel Kol. Chazal say that with every breath you take, you should say Hallel. With every breath you take, you should say Hallel. Now, that gets a little complicated, because if we're really going to say Hallel literally, that takes a lot of breaths. If each breath requires you to say Hallel, so you're constantly accumulating more and more of a deficit. So the truth is that that's actually a purpose in and of itself. If to have the consciousness that, yeah, as we move through life, we are accumulating so much chesed from Hashem that we're in debt over our heads. And on the contrary, all Hashem wants is our dedication, with the understanding that we can never really repay Him. But this is one basic thing to appreciate. To appreciate air, drinking in the air. To appreciate other aspects of nature in the broader sense, of the bigger forces of nature. When you see the sun coming up in the morning, or if you wake up after the sun is already up, but you see the sun, you step outside, you feel the sun on you, you feel the warmth, and you realize that this is a massive, extremely powerful, life-giving force that is providing light, and is providing energy, and is providing growth. And you walk in the sun, and you look up at the sun, and you feel its warmth, and you should actually feel the bracha of Hashem shining down on you. Use the sun as a certain dynamic of appreciating, of sensing Hashem. Sensing Hashem once again, so to speak, shining His countenance on you as you walk through the street. And when the sun sets also, and when the night settles in, if we appreciate that night is there for a purpose also. Night is there, it enables the soil, everything that's going on in earth, to relax a little bit, to rejuvenate itself, because when the sun is out there, it's working it hard. So it gives it a chance to refresh. There are also different types of animals and plants that thrive at night. And it also causes us to slow down and take a rest and rejuvenate ourselves. Night is a very big bracha. So that too, whenever you see the day changing to night or the night changing to day, you should watch Hashem in action. See Hashem caring for His world, which is us. It's us who are here now, and Hashem is busy making it function properly in order to provide us with a livable, comfortable world. Part of the purpose of night also, why do we need to go to sleep? Why couldn't it be that, you know, we have energy and it just keeps on going for our whole life? Why do we need to go to sleep? If you think about it, there's a lot of just psychological benefit in the need to sleep. How often do you use the expression that you need to sleep on something or to just sleep it off? A new day provides a lot of opportunity to let things go, to move past things. If we would just be going on and on and on, fights would continue, problems would, we just never feel like something. It doesn't happen very often that you're very stressed about some problem, very aggravated about something. You sleep, you wake up in the morning, and you just have a different feel about it. It's already faded. So when we see the sun setting, when we see the dark setting in, we have a bracha about that in Ma'ariv. Shabbat Dvorim Ma'ariv Aravim. Hashem is closing the curtains in order for us to be able to step back a little, get some rest, rejuvenate, and have a fresh start tomorrow. You see the sun coming up in the morning. Appreciate that. Appreciate the warmth. Appreciate all of the energy that's coming down. When you feel winds blowing against your face, you know what's going on. Hashem is busy with the winds. He's busy transporting the clouds from where they came from. They formed from vapors rising from the sea, which is itself a whole purification process. Hashem is purifying the salty seawater, which can't be drunk as is. and he's raising it up into the clouds in pure form, and then he has the winds moving it over to the areas that are going to benefit from it. So when you feel wind blowing against your face, it's just a faint little ripple effect of the stronger winds that are going on higher up. And you're feeling Hashem moving along that massive food factory. And certainly when you see rain coming down, Rabbi Avigdor Miller used to hammer this home all the time. Don't say shucks. Say, this is my food for the next season. See Hashem feeding you. He said more than that. See Hashem bringing down the next generation of children, the next generation of boys and girls is now coming down in that rain. So this is one area of study. One area of study is Earth itself and the big forces of nature that we see around us. Another area of study, another area of focus, is man. This, as we've touched on already, is an endless area of study in terms of all of man's faculties, in terms of every limb, the wisdom of how each limb is designed. We should elaborate on this, but we're not going to elaborate on it now. But this is another fundamental area of study, man himself. And he breaks this into two parts. Number one is just understanding the function of man in general. And then Number one was earth. Number two is understanding the function of man in general. Number three is the structure of man, the way he's made, all the different aspects of his body. Number four is wildlife. Also, a whole world of study. Wildlife with all of its different species. And number five is plant life and minerals. Again, a whole world of study. Number six, and this is interesting, number six, he wants us to get used to the idea that even man-made inventions, man-made innovations, are all also part of Hashem's plan for our mankind. All kinds of different skills and crafts that were developed over the years, Hashem planned when the different things should arrive on the scene for the benefit of man, and to learn to appreciate these things as well as chasadim of Hashem. If we'll talk from the perspective of our generation, we live in a very pampered time. Just all the comforts of existence of our time, being basically at the tail end of the whole course of history, when life is relatively comfortable and simple in the technical sense. Otherwise, it's much more complicated. Appreciate all of the comforts of the modern era as chasadim of Hashem. That's what somebody once asked Rabbi Avigdor Miller, and he would encourage looking around and seeing the wonders of Hashem all over the place. So a person said, walking down the street, men would be encouraged to have their eyes on the floor, not to be looking all around if they're on a busy street and there may be immodestly dressed women. So we're going to be encouraged to have our eyes on the floor, not to be looking all around to see wonders around us. So Rabbi Avigdor Miller answered, he said, you're going to have your eyes on the floor? So look at the pavement. Look at the pavement and appreciate the Chesed Hashem in pavement. You know, it was like in earlier times to walk through the street. It was all muddy. It was dirt. Pavement is a very great bracha not to be taken for granted. And once we've mentioned that, there are other things to be said also. The fact that you live in a generation where there's an organized sewer system. You walk through the street and it's a pleasant experience. This is something very interesting that I wouldn't think of, but I forgot who it was. I think the Elder of Kelm said that when he moved at some point from his small town to St. Petersburg, the capital at the time, he said that one of the most amazing things that hit him in the big city was the fact that the streets didn't smell. There wasn't waste all over the place. what he was used to, what normal life was. He walked outside into the street. The street smelled foul. It was horse waste, and there were chamber areas, etc. Again, in this sense also, we live in a pampered reality. This is the point that the Gemara makes. Might sound like a strange example, but again, on the same subject, the Gemara actually makes a point of stressing this. And for us, it's that much more relevant, how having a an on-the-premises bathroom is a very, very big luxury. If you think about how in earlier times, people just shared a hole in the courtyard, or else you find yourself some private corner, it was the comforts of having a in your own house a private room that you can lock. And in many homes, you have more than one. These are also chasadim of Hashem. Hashem planned on these different things being invented at various points in history, and we, coming at this point, are mamish being treated with many, many comforts and luxuries. These are also things to be very thankful for. And then, there's number seven. Area number seven, and he introduces this as another area to study as of Chesed Hashem, and the wisdom of Hashem is in the Torah itself. In the Torah itself, and what it does for us, this is a whole area of study in and of itself, and appreciating, well, first of all, the wisdom of the Torah. That doesn't require elaboration for anybody who has actually engaged in Torah study, certainly in depth. But besides that, just the benefits of what the Torah provides for the people who live by it. The benefits of what the Torah provides. If we just start thinking through a number of the different mitzvahs just offhand. Shabbos. Shabbos as a time to just completely step back from everything, to step out of the stresses of life. A means of family getting together. I'll just give to bring out this point. So it's actually my grandmother's yahrzeit tonight, tomorrow. V'rotem Abbas Chaim Mordechai. So I'll just relate an incident that she would always relate to us. She grew up in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And she was one of the only, if not the only at the time, I don't know exactly, but one of the only truly religious families in the area. And she went to public school, and her friends were, for the large part, Jewish, but not affiliated, or very, very minimally affiliated. And it was always a struggle. It was always a struggle how on Shabbos, all of their friends would go to the beach, all the friends would go to the theater, and they wanted to go, and their father wouldn't let, and they would complain. So finally, her father told the children, he said, "You're complaining." They kept telling him, "We're left out, we're deprived." He said, "I want you to invite all of your friends over Shabbos afternoon." They didn't want to, they were embarrassed, but he pushed, maybe it took a couple of weeks, but whatever the case is, my grandmother and her siblings, they each invited a few friends. They had a house full of friends coming over on Shabbos afternoon. And her father prepared, he laid out a table, basically a Shabbos table with a variety of the different Shabbos foods, cake, fruits, nash, laid out a beautiful Shabbos table, and the kids arrived with their friends, their irreligious friends who had never seen anything like this. And he sat them all around the table, and he asked each of them their names. And then he basically conducted the table the way he would conduct his Shabbos table. He sang some songs, he told some stories. And then after a while, he told them, "Okay, it's my custom to take a nap Shabbos afternoon, so you'll excuse me." And he went off to take his nap. So my grandmother said how they were immediately surrounded by their friends who were just looking at them with amazement, and they said, "Your father does this every week?" And she said, "Yes, he does it. It's actually, we sit down three times on Shabbos, Shabbos night, and then in the morning, and then," and they were amazed, and they said, "We never have a chance for our fathers to barely even look at us." And I said, "You know, when if he finally has some time off, he's exhausted. He just wants to sit on the recliner reading his paper." Their friends were very, very amazed at this scene of simply sitting around the table, focused, spending time together in a leisurely way, with attention, stories, singing. And they were amazed that this happens every single week. Every single week. Okay? And finally, when her father woke up later, all the friends were already gone. So he came out and with a twinkle in his eyes said to his kids, "Okay, so now you tell me who is deprived and who isn't. Think about forgetting the significance of the various Yom Tovim. Setting that aside, what Yom Tov does for the family, what it does for a child's childhood, what sort of memories it creates of togetherness. And just going by today's reality, if these things were left up to us, they would never happen. There's always so much going on and so much to keep up with. Hashem set it up very, very, very strictly that everything, absolutely everything stops. If there was just a little bit of this or a little bit of that that we were able to do on Shabbos Yom Tov, it would completely take over. Everything stops. If we think about other various aspects of the benefits that we receive by living a Torah life, this is another area of chesed of Hashem. Chesed of Hashem to study. Now we have to make a point and say, let's not make the mistake of thinking that this is the premise of living a Torah life. Living a Torah life is first and foremost because of our connection to Hashem, of our loyalty to Hashem, and serving Hashem. First and foremost, Torah is about us serving Hashem. It's not about Hashem serving us. And first and foremost, it's somewhat the understanding that we keep the Torah for Olam Haba, or just for our relationship with Hashem. And Hashem, it doesn't behoove him. It's not like he's obligated to also make the Torah something pleasant and beneficial for us in this world. But he does. But he does. He does not just demand of us to be, you be the suffering Jew in this world, and then you'll be rewarded in the next world. He provided us with the program of his own service, the program of what we have to do for him is such that if we live it properly, ultimately we just end up benefiting in this world as well. And really that's what Hashem wants. He wants us to enjoy both worlds, to get the best of both worlds. So many strict halachas that have such profound bearing on family life. The halachas that turn the family unit into something sacred. In so many different ways. Ultimately, we can go on and on with different examples, but Lemaisa, the person who is living a life of Torah is also living a rich, fulfilling, and satisfying life in this world too. This is the famous mashal of the Dubna Magid. The famous mashal of the Dubna Magid, with the pasuk that says, "Ki lo esi karosa Yaakov ki yogata bi Yisrael." Literally translated, the pasuk says, "You're not really addressing me, Yaakov, as you toil for me, Yisrael." Meaning, you're working hard for me, you're toiling for me, but you're not really reaching me. What does that pasuk mean? So the Dubna Magid gives a famous mashal. He says, there was a person getting off a train, and there were porters waiting lined up, hoping for a job, to be able to take somebody's pekulach home for him. So somebody got off the train, and the porter rushed up to him and said, "Can I take your baggage home for you?" So he kind of pointed in the general direction, "There's my stuff." Okay, he headed home. The porter was going to be bringing the stuff home on his own. So finally, the porter comes to his house and puts the stuff outside as he's told. He tells me, you leave this stuff outside or you leave this stuff on whatever in the foyer. Come in to me and I'll pay you. So the porter comes in, leaves the packages in the foyer. He schlepped, he's sweating. And he comes into the balabais, and he's huffing and puffing, and he's sweating, and he says, all right, I did the job, I want my pay. And the balabais looks at him and says, I'm not paying you. He says, why not? He said, you bought me the wrong package. So the porter says, what's that supposed to mean? You didn't even see what I bought. He says, yeah, but I know that what I had there was an envelope. I see that you've been schlepping big packages. I don't know what you bought me, but it wasn't my things. All I had there was an envelope. He pointed in the general direction where all the baggage was. All I had there was an envelope. If you had bought me my envelope, then you wouldn't be sweating and huffing and puffing like this. So Hashem says to Klal Yisrael, if you find my service to be a cause for huffing and puffing, if you find my service to be something difficult, Shver Tzayin Ayid, right? It's difficult to be a Jew. There are definitely challenges. But if it begins and ends with that, if you're a suffering Jew who is just willing to serve Hashem with immense sacrifice in this world in order to get the benefits in the next world, Hashem says, well, there's something that's very, very off here. You're missing something. There's something off-key about your service, because if you're doing it right and approaching it right, you should find it to be a very satisfying and fulfilling experience in this world too. Now, that's not to be taken wrongly. Certainly, a life of Torah, a life of Avodas Hashem, can have its challenges and difficulties. But at the same time, we should be able to connect to the beauty of it, to the richness, to the fulfilling aspects of it, and then on the contrary, the difficulties, the toil that we do, can all be a part of things that you work for, just enhance the sense of fulfillment. So that's another area. That's the seventh area of focus that the Chavis HaVavis is telling us. The chesed and the chachma that inherent in the Torah itself. And then he goes on to say that there's another subordinate aspect to that. And that is social norms and legal systems that have come together by man, which is another aspect. He says this is Hashem for outside the system of Torah, which is given to the Jewish people. Hashem also implanted in man a sense of decency and a sense of being able to put together national law systems that make the world a legal, livable place. He says this also is to be seen as chesed Hashem that is being provided for man. Okay. That is the gist of Perek Dalet. Again, if we'll sum it up, seven areas of study where we can study Hashem's chesed, Hashem's kindliness. Earth itself, in the bigger picture, the layout of earth, the seas, the winds, the mighty forces of nature, that's number one. Number two and three are man, in terms of appreciating man's function, man's place in the world. And then number three is appreciating man's body, the wisdom, the chesed, and all of the different body parts and how they operate and how they come together. Number four is the whole world of wildlife. Number five is the world of plant life and minerals. Number six is human innovation and invention, all of the comforts that were created by man, which is once again the product of Hashem's planning, manipulating history, which will appear at which point, and giving man the insight to do these things. And number seven is the benefit and the chokhmah that we see in Torah and also in the legal systems used by the world in general. Okay, now, the Chavis HaVavis then goes on in the fifth perek to say, okay, now you have those seven areas of kindness, of wisdom to study. Where do you start? Which should we consider the most basic, the most obligatory? And here's a fundamental point. He says, you have to start with the one that's closest to you and most relevant to you. Which is that? So he says, it's man himself. The place to start seeing Hashem's Chochmah and Hashem's Chesed is in man himself. That's closest to home. And therefore, here's an important point. Here's an important point. This was expressed by different Torah greats in different ways. The Brisker Rav said, for example, that if a person said, this is a little bit of a harsh point, the Brisker Rav was a very blunt man. So he expressed this in his sardonic style, but there's an important point for us held here. Don't be offended by the way he said it. But he said that if a person feels that he needs to travel to Switzerland to see the Alps in order to appreciate the wonders of Hashem, then what it really means is that he's not willing to put in the efforts. Because by studying his own hand, by studying his own systems, by sitting at home and just really contemplating his body, is no less wondrous and perhaps more wondrous than the Alps. Now, of course, there's definitely something to be said to being inspired by new, novel, grand scenes. But the point to understand here is that if we're talking about Bechina as a life approach, as a life project, you're leaving it at a certain surface level. If it's only, it's going to be limited to things that move you in an external kind of way, but you're not really drawing out from within yourself the ability to study and to contemplate things that are so obvious, but even more fundamental and more basic in terms of the Chochmah of Hashem and the Chesed of Hashem. And therefore, push your mind a little bit more. Don't need to be hit by it in the face from the outside. Hashem would like you to actually exert your own mind and your own thought to be able to also appreciate, to be able to see the chesed in your different body parts, the functioning of your body, your different faculties, your different systems, to be able to see the chesed in them and to appreciate them. They say that Newton said that the existence of a thumb is enough to convince me of the existence of a creator. A thumb is a wonderful thing. All the fingers are a wonderful thing. Imagine if they weren't broken into four fingers like that, if it was just like a mitten. So many things you wouldn't be able to do. You wouldn't be able to write. Writing would be so much more clumsy. Embroidering would be so much more clumsy. Many of the fine motor activities that we do, which we come to so depend on, would be so much more clumsy and complicated if not for the fact that we have our fingers broken apart like this. And then, on top of that, you have the thumb that can either, you can move it around on a hinge, right? It swivels around to either work together. Let's say you want to push something or just hold up a big box from the bottom. So you join your thumb to join forces with the other fingers, and it pushes pushes together with them or holds together with them. But if you need to grip something, if your thumb would simply be in the same row as all of your other fingers, again, it would work, but it would be more clumsy. This way you make a fist that the thumb comes from the other angle, and you hold that thing in your fist, you hold it in your grip in a much more secure and firm way. And that's when you're holding something in your fist. What about, come back to what we discussed before, writing. Imagine writing if you had five fingers in one row. This way, you turn your thumb around, your thumb comes up against the index finger, and you're able to write, you're able to sew, you're able to embroider. The thumb, in and of itself, is something of great chachmah and chesed in terms of making our lives comfortable. That's a simple example. The examples go on and on. So, That's what the Chavis Halvavis is telling us. He says, yes, there's many worlds out there to study and contemplate, but don't skip steps. Don't skip steps. Put a lot of focus on your own body, your own faculties. Just to give two examples of the faculties, he goes on and on about all kinds of different stages of development and growth and different body parts, etc. And he goes through the faculties. I'll just give one very interesting example. He says how we have conflicting faculties. We have memory and we have forgetfulness. So memory, we all understand what a chesed memory is. If we just operated in the moment, we would never learn from experience. We'd never be able to really accumulate wisdom that serves us later in life. We'd never be able to keep track of our own reality. You'd always have to, in order to find the kitchen in your house, you'd have to go in and out of every room. Memory, we obviously see as a chesed. But then there's also forgetfulness. And he says that forgetfulness is also a very great chesed. Why is forgetfulness a great chesed? We would more tend to see forgetfulness as an inconvenience, as something that will often get in the way. But no, forgetfulness is also a chesed. Think about it. Was there one time, 26 years ago, when something very humiliating happened, and you felt like you just wanted to be swallowed up in the ground, mortified, and you thought you would never live it down? You thought you would never live it down. Your mamish red-faced, you felt your face beating, and there were a bunch of people around that you thought you'd never be able to look them in the face again. And a year later, you're operating in that same circle of people, and that very humiliating incident is long forgotten. That's where forgetfulness is a big bracha. You forget. You forget. A few days go by, and the effect of what happens wears off. That's the bracha of forgetfulness. And the people around you forget also, and you know that they will. And that's why, a few days later, a few weeks later, everybody's past it. Aggravating things. Something very, very aggravating happens. Something sad happens. Chas v'shalom. And a person thinks that he's never going to get past this. But forgetfulness does its thing. Forgetfulness does its thing, and it eases the effect. A day goes by, 2 days, 3 days, a week, a month, and you've moved on. A certain effect still remains. There's a certain aggravating memory there. But it's very, very much faded because of the bracha of forgetfulness. Resentment, grudges. A person has a fight with somebody else. If not for the midah of forgetfulness operating in you and in the other person, you'd never be able to move on. You'd never be able to, the relationship would never be able to get back on the right track. The midah of forgetfulness serves as a soother. It lets things fade. And in a very, very large way, it enables us to keep life moving, to go on, not to just be stuck in aggravation, in sadness, in humiliation, in resentment. So therefore, even just see how things fade, that's another area of chesed of Hashem. That's just one example of the many things that the Chavis Halvavis goes through in this perek. Okay, we made our way basically toward the end of the perek, toward the end of the shah. Well, this was a brief sampling of perek hay, of the fifth perek of the shah. What we have ahead of us now is the last perek, Emirat Hashem. I thought that I would get that all in this shiur, but we'll leave the focus of the last perek with its profound points for next time, Emirat Hashem. Now we'll end the recording and then we'll unmute and we'll part.